Welcome, dear listeners, to What the Tech, the podcast series brought to you by ProServe IT. We're committed to helping you decode and understand the world of technology, one episode at a time. This month, our focus is on the ever-evolving field of cybersecurity, and you are tuning in to this week's episode, Improve Your Insurability and Protect Your Business with Cybersecurity. Today, we will peel back the layers on some of the most important aspects of cybersecurity. We're going to talk about how Microsoft's threat protection system is becoming a crucial tool for companies to protect their business and how it collects 8 trillion signals a day to identify potential threats and respond quickly. We'll delve into the intriguing concept of the house framework as a method to contextualize and simplify technology, emphasizing the foundational role of security. Get ready for some insightful discussions and practical advice that could change the way you look at technology and its place in your organization. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Microsoft and ProServe IT webinar today on insurability with cybersecurity. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Lisa to get us started.
Awesome. Thanks, Paulette. Hi, everybody. My name is Lisa Goslin. I am with Microsoft. I'm on the security partner development team. And what that means is I get to work with great partners like ProServe IT and put together technology and services to provide out to customers and clients to help them with their risk posture. And today we're going to talk about cyber insurance, cybersecurity. I've been at Microsoft coming up now on 3 years. I've been in the cybersecurity market for 20 plus years. And before I delve into our first slide, I'm going to pass it over to Eric and Mac to introduce themselves. Over to you, Eric.
Hi, thanks, Lisa. I'm Eric Sugar. I'm the CEO at ProServe IT, here to help educate everyone on cyber insurance, cybersecurity, and why I think it's really important that you at least have thoughts around your cyber policies, thoughts around how to implement cybersecurity to reduce risk inside your business. And I'll pass it over to Mac to introduce himself.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in today. I also work at ProServe IT with Eric. I am on the account management side of things aligned to all things security. So I'm hoping to bring some insight today on some of the conversations we're having with partners, some of the trends, some of the challenges they might have, and how we help them overcome those challenges. Very excited to be here with Lisa and Eric and looking forward to it.
Awesome. The agenda slide. Perfect. Thanks, Paulette. First and foremost, I want to thank you, everyone on the that's joining us today. I know that there are lots of webinars out there. This is your time. And what we really want you to get out of today's session, we want to demystify the cyber insurance piece for you and how it's connected and joined with cybersecurity. And then take a look at the challenges that customers face. This is dang hard. This is very complex, this space. And so we want to make today's session actionable. So when you leave here, there's things that you feel you're equipped to do to increase your security posture. And then the last thing is really talk about the insurance brokers, their role in this, and the requirements that they're asking you to prove your risk posture and what that looks like. Next slide. So let's first talk about cyber insurance. At a very base level, insurance is all about math. It's a bunch of statisticians that are pretty smart, crunching numbers, looking at historical data and trends, and then they put together what is a risk and what is the probability. And we're all familiar with it from our home, our life, our automobile insurances. And if you look at it from that perspective, it's as simple as, okay, I insure my house, I'm charged a premium. If I add a trampoline, my premium goes up because my risk goes up. If I add a swimming pool and a diving board, same thing, it goes up. Same thing happens with cyber insurance. The problem and the challenge that the industry has faced, there's not a lot of historical data. I've been in this business, cybersecurity, for 20 years, but there's not a lot of data. And we're just beginning to gather that and put some intelligence behind that data to understand the trends and what the new threat factors out there look like. I included this slide because on the right-hand side, that in 2020, cyber insurance companies, they lost a lot of money. So what happened? We all know the pandemic happened, and virtually overnight, companies had to figure out how to do business, how to continue their business, but in a very different setting from home. And so companies that had maybe a 3 to 5 plan digital transformation project, now overnight, they had to turn that cloud on. People were grabbing their tablets, students. I know my kids, hey, I need a tablet. I've got to dial into class. They were dusting off desktops that were in your corner of your room for 8 years that had God only knows what version of software. And so at the end of the day, what that meant was this external attack surface exploded. Millions and millions of non-sanctioned, non-IT sanctioned devices were being used to do business as usual. And this just represented a gold mine for the bad actors out there. Because now think about all those vulnerable points that they could now access. So the external attack surface increased, which meant the bad actors and their attacks increased. Ransomware went sky high, and insurance companies had losses because of the data breaches. And so from that, we had cyber insurance companies over pivot and say, and insurance premiums that you might have paid in 2017 went absolutely astronomical. The coverages shrank, the policies shrank, but the rates went up. The reason why I included this slide in this session today, I think it's really important for people to understand the cost of cybercrime. It's expected to increase, at least by cybersecurity ventures, 15% year over year. And what really took me by surprise was that equates to a $10.5 trillion number. It's going to be and that's by 2025. It's going to represent the third largest economy behind US and China. That is crazy. And I share that with you so that you get a sense of how big this problem is and how profitable it is. They are stating that the profitability from cybercrime will exceed all the profitability of global trade from major illegal drugs. And it's here now, and it's going to continue in the near future, in the foreseeable future. Next slide. Okay, so cyber insurance companies over-pivoted. What they did was say, we're going to increase rates because it's pretty simple, again, with insurance companies. If they cost themselves out of the market, no one will buy it. If they undervalue and have premiums too low, they go out of business. And so they over-pivoted when they saw the losses that they incurred in 2020 and 2021, and they put some unrealistic expectations and requirements out in the market for folks like you. And what they said, instead of just looking at basic security hygiene, what we saw was requirements from these brokers, from everything from DLP to quantum computing it just was outrageous. And so we now see that we're coming back. We've had a little bit of a slowdown on the claims in 2021 and 2022, and now we're seeing a reset of those baseline controls. Next slide. So let's now talk about from a client's perspective. As I said in the beginning, this is dang hard. This is really complex. You need, let me just state, we're all defenders. Every single one of us are defenders, and we have to think like that. Not even from the company we work for, it's at home. How many of you on your phone today got messages from PayPal and Amazon that unless you respond to this immediately, we're going to cut you off? It is crazy. This is here to stay. And we all have to, as an ecosystem, bond together as defenders to be able to thwart these bad actors. So customers are dealing with the complexity. How many different security tools that are doing specific siloed things. That's not giving you visibility into your environment. And are you able to, from those disparate tools, understand what your real security posture or your risk posture is? That makes it very challenging. Cyber risks and attacks are on the rise. I saw a stat that said in 2021, there was an average of 579 password attacks per second. I just saw in 2022, that went from 579, it over doubled to 1287 passwords per second. Identity is constantly, your credentials are constantly being targeted. And again, we've really got to become the defenders in order to band together. And we can't do it alone. Look at the skill shortage that we have out there. It's hard to get experts that really understand cybersecurity. And even if you do, if you're lucky enough to get an expert, the tools that they may be utilizing are really burning them out because it's just giving them so many false positives and making them chase things that really aren't relevant. We need to get to a place where the information you're collecting gives you insight and intelligence into your company's risk posture. Next slide. Okay, so this is what I want you to take away from today's webinar. These are the actionable items. 98% of attacks can be prevented if you do these five things. Five things, not quantum computing and artificial intelligence. Those are all icing on the cake. But if you believe on and start with this simple premise, identity is the new perimeter. It's not about four walls anymore, and we protect the kingdom. Identity. So you must have multi-factor authentication. Absolutely no excuse not to start there. The second thing I'd say is least privileged. So we talk about zero trust concepts, and it's complex, and it's involved. But guess what? Just take one of those principles from that framework, and that is least privilege. It's not a question of if they break in. It's a question of when. And when that bad actor gets in on your network, you're going to want to make sure that they have least privileged access so that you have the other multi-layered security controls to stop it from advancing. The third thing is, and I know this is really hard, but it's update your versions, your applications, your patches. You've got to stay on top of that. I got a message from Microsoft last night saying, if your iPhone or iPad or anything that touches the network is not updated to Apple's latest version within 24 hours, you will not have access. So those start with those three things. And then I would expand it to, obviously, anti-malware and then protect your data. At the end of the day, it's all about the privacy of that data and your crown jewels. And that data has to be protected. And that's a little bit more involved because you have to understand what data do I have? Where is that data? Who can access that data? And once they access it, what can they do with that data? Can they print it? Can they download it? Can they forward it? There's tools and technologies to help you through that journey. And speaking of journey, again, you need an organization like ProServe IT that are experts. This is what they do 24/7. They are eyes on glass. They're constantly out there looking for the new threats, the zero-day vulnerabilities that come up. This is an evolving market, and it's so important. It's not a one and done. So you don't implement MFA and then, okay, I'm all done. Everything's great. My risk posture should be fantastic. It's not like that. It is do these basic hygiene steps. And then on top of that, have eyes on glass 24/7. They can then not only protect you and provide the best protection, but they also can help you on that cyber insurance journey and broker some of those conversations to show this is the risk posture of the client and this is what they can do to continue meeting that risk requirement. And with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Matt to help you on that journey.
Thanks, Lisa. And I think, Lisa, a lot of what you said ties really well into what I'm going to speak to. So this is our typical engagement approach with partners. And like you said, it really is a journey. And the reason it's a journey is because security is ongoing. Technology is ever changing. There's new vulnerabilities with new technologies that come out, new access points for cyber criminals. Cybercrime is evolving, not just increasing, but evolving in the way they can gain access to your environment. And lastly, how we protect our environment is changing. When you think about the transition from just using an antivirus to endpoint protection to now 24/7 monitoring. So this is the way that we typically engage. And for us, the first step is discovery. And what discovery is assessing where you're at and identifying some of the gaps, risks, and vulnerabilities that you currently have specific to your environment. And from that discovery, we look to identify the top priorities that you can do from a secure posture approach. This, we do this in a must-do, should-do, could-do fashion. This kind of helps you prioritize security enhancements specific to your environment. And then the last kind of portion of that, it's great to know what you should do, but we put it in an actual proactive, actionable roadmap for you. And the great thing about this is with the roadmap, it's specific to your business. There's also no commitment to further engagement. So you have this roadmap, and from there you can prioritize and enhance based on budgetary considerations, business goals you're looking to achieve, and what your overall appetite for risk, because that might vary depending on the industry you're in, what technologies you use, and the size of your business. So that's the discovery portion, and that's typically where we start. It's important to understand where you are and where you want to get to. I won't get too much into level two and level three, but we'll talk to that a little later. But level two is effectively implementing the actionable roadmap items. And typically we would work with you and have conversations to understand what's a priority to you and look to implement the must-do items first where you're most vulnerable. And then Lisa talked to the last point is managed security services. That's the direction of the industry, is having that 24/7 monitoring and constant visibility into your environment, because security is a journey, and having that visibility allows you to keep up with trends and adapt to risks and vulnerabilities as they change and as time goes on. So that's typically how we engage. And I think it ties very nicely into a lot of what we'll be talking about today.
I agree. It's a map, right? And it's so critical for clients to say, where do I start? You start here. You figure out what it is you have, what your maturity level is. And then you can say, here's where I want to get to, and then help map out that journey. Eric, you've been in this business for a long time. Do you have comments around cyber insurance and what you've seen over the past couple of years?
Yeah, it's been an interesting change with cyber insurance brokers and providers. Like, the biggest and most notable changes I've seen is how they've turned to automated scanning of their clients. So as soon as you apply for a policy, they scan every known item they can find. So they'll do a domain name search on you. They'll scan your website. They'll try and find anywhere they can see a hole in your network. They're trying to make your job harder to get the policy and give themselves a way to protect their risk. The other thing that's interesting is I've talked with some of the providers, the insurance providers, they don't know how to measure the risk. So they're trying to put a risk profile on the unknown. So with your house insurance, they know it's the big risks are water and fire, break-in, top three. And that covers 98% of the issue you have with a home insurance policy. With a cyber insurance policy, they know what happened last year. There's no reflection of last year into next year, because the whole scenery changes, the whole pivot, the whole placement of tools, technology is very different than it was before. So those are the two biggest changes. And then the price increase is tied to policies and unknown risk.
Awesome. All right, next question. So Matt, why don't you talk a little bit about what can a customer do today? So the folks on the line, what should they walk away with today? How did they get started? I think you alluded to it with the discover piece, but anything to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For me, the big thing is you want to discover and understand where you're most vulnerable and where there's risk, because it's going to be different for every business, and every business is going to have a different appetite for risk and have different types of data that they might be storing and risk. A financial services company that has 5,000 employees is going to operate a little bit differently than a manufacturing company that has 50 employees and 30 of those are kind of frontline workers. So I think that's the biggest thing for me is identifying where you're at and where you want to get to. But in terms of where you can start without actually doing that discovery, I kind of have three places. I think you can do a lot of enhancements by just making small changes. So the first one would be identity and access management. And that kind of ties into the zero trust concept. So looking at multi-factor authentication and conditional access. The second aspect would be looking at your email and utilizing some of the settings and configurations within your email. Email is the number one kind of attack point for cyber criminals. So if you can utilize what you've invested in, and whether that's disabling email auto forwarding or legacy authentications, just little things like that can go a long way. And then the last thing for me would be educating your users, and not just educating your users once, but doing it on a consistent basis. Because a lot of what we've all spoken to is that it's constantly changing technology, security, and cybercrime and risk. So educating your users consistently can go a long way, because users can prove to be one of the biggest challenges, because we have so many different demographics of users utilizing technology, whether that's younger adults that know how to use technology great, but might not understand the implications it has on security, or older folks that technology is new to them and they don't really know what's going on. So I think those are three great places to start. And if you aren't doing those is a great place to start and moves you really far along the security journey.
Yeah. The one thing I want to emphasize, and I'm going to be a little vulnerable myself and share a story that may be career limiting, but Mac, I can't overemphasize how important it is to educate your employees. And so I've been in cybersecurity for 20 years. I get phishing. I get everything. I joined Microsoft, as I said, coming up on almost 3 years ago. And as you can imagine, organization as big as Microsoft with 200,000 employees, there's a ton of information when you first join, understanding the different groups and the products and lots of information. And about 6 months in, and this just highlights the bad actors and the vulnerability that they take on the human aspect of this. And I got an email that said, urgent, you must take action. This is Microsoft IT. We're going to shut you off if you don't update your password immediately. And I clicked it, and it was a phishing. It was Microsoft phishing me. And I was like, oh my God, if that goes into my HR file, I'm done. I'm in the security group. So my point in sharing that is, even someone like me, never mind you're just normal everyday employees, it is so important to educate them and do those phishing scenarios so that they're aware of what they would look like.
The one other thing I'll comment on, Lisa, and thank you for being vulnerable and sharing, is the other piece is a mindset shift. So acknowledging that we are all targets. I think there's a common misconception for sure in mid-market and SMB that they think we're not a target. Citibank is the target, or RBC is the target, where it's actually the mid-market and the SMB that are the true targets, because they're easier to get to and there's more of them. So it's just that mindset of saying, I'm a target. If I'm a target, now what do I do next?
Yep. Good point. Eric, why manage security services versus building? Why build versus plan?
So I'd say there's two different answers here based on the size of the business. For mid-market and small businesses, I don't know that you can afford to build a true 24/7 SOC and have employees watching around the clock. It's unfair to try and put that cost burden onto a small or medium-sized business. And as you get out of SMB or mid-market into the upper mid-market enterprise space, I think it's a way to manage risk. So having someone whose only core competency is to be an MSSP and understands the risks and is dealing with a broader spectrum of clients and can see more, the more data you can see, the more effective you are. So as a single business, you just can't see the same volume of data. So those are the two kind of common things that jump into my head is A, cost, and then B, expertise.
Yep. I agree.
I have a couple thoughts there as well, Lisa. Sorry, if you don't mind. So the one thing about leveraging a managed security service provider is that when you build your SOC internally, they're focused strictly on your environment and the day-to-day operations of their environment. When you leverage a managed security service partner like a ProServe IT, one, they're working with a multitude of other partners in the same capacity, and they're constantly gaining insights and learnings and keeping up with trends from other environments as well. And then when you think about the tools we use from a managed security service perspective, we use Microsoft Sentinel. And as a partner of Microsoft as well, we have access to Microsoft's insights and investment in security. So it ties back to that when you build your own socket, you're focused on you, but with an MSP, it's an ongoing journey and you're keeping up with all the trends and changes that are taking place in the space.
I want to just add one comment there. Microsoft, when you look across our business units, there are six business units. It's data and AI and modern work and security and cloud, and I'm sure I'm missing some. The point is we collect as a company because of our business units. Oh, Xbox gaming, that's what I forgot. We collect 65 trillion, there's that T again, signals every day. So what does that mean? It means that we have insights onto what's going out, what's going on over the internet, and we assimilate and normalize those signals and translate them with intelligence to then build that and push that out to our product so that the ProServes of the world have that intelligence. That's the proactive perspective that you get with a managed security service. And that's that. Those signals alone probably don't mean much, but with the intelligence of the patterns and the analysis that we put them through, they're insights that are unique to us. All right, let's talk about zero trust. We touched upon it a little bit, Mac. What's the zero trust concept and why is it so important?
Yeah, I think the way Microsoft puts it is never trust and always verify. So you're effectively assuming breach, right? So I think this really became important, like you talked about earlier, when we moved to the hybrid environments because of the pandemic and everyone was dusting off their old desktops, like you said. And there's kind of two major reasons that I think the zero trust concept is super important. The one is that cyber criminals are very sophisticated in the way they act. So some of the things that they're able to do and act as other people and what seems like a trusty source can be someone operating out of anywhere in the world. So I think that's the one thing, is it protects against that and adds another layer. The other aspect is the zero trust approach really supports users. And I reference this a lot, and I think I already spoke to it, but users really are the biggest challenge. And Lisa, you shared your story as someone that knows the risk with security and what's out there, but still falling victim to one of those links because you might be tired and click a link, or it just seems intriguing. So those are the two things that the zero trust concept really covers. And the one, I think, misconception with the zero trust concept is that it hurts productivity. But I think it's configured now in a way that you don't even notice it, but it really adds that extra layer of protection.
And I'm glad you said that, because I think they don't understand the true automation that is now available with a lot of these technologies. And so it isn't heavy lifting, that there's a lot of automation that can be incorporated. Anything to add, Eric?
No, I think Mac nailed the whole idea of zero trust. And I think it's an important concept to understand and think through and how to apply it inside of the four walls of your business.
Okay. So you guys offer cybersecurity workshops. Can you describe what that is, Eric, and what's the value a customer would get?
Yep. And I'll shout out Lisa Microsoft, because you guys partner with us to help with these cybersecurity workshops. And really it's the way to start with that discovery offer. So a workshop or a whiteboarding session helps describe all the concepts of security and then actually lets you see that security technology deployed in your environment. So you can see the cybersecurity threat simulation happening in real time. You could run a simulation against all your staff and say, hey, what happens if we do send out the links that say, click here? And my favorite one, we run them on ourselves all the time. We sent out one to our sales team specifically saying, here's your comp attainment. there's a bunch of little triggers and errors in it to see how many people clicked on that one. Yeah. That was a tough one. So our cyber team has some fun with the testing and pushes pretty hard. But the workshops are all about letting you experience the tech that's available to understand that it is, once it's set up and configured, it doesn't reduce productivity, does protect you, and it creates a way to learn about it without huge investments.
Cool. All right, Mac, next one for you. Can you advance the slide, please, Bart? I saw on your website, Modern Technology House, and I thought it was very intriguing. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, for sure. And I think Eric might have some things to add here, as I know he was involved in the development of our house framework. But effectively, what it is, technology now with so many different technologies is such a vague term. So when you say technology, it could mean a number of things. So our house framework serves a few purposes. One, it helps to contextualize technology and break it into different aspects and different groups. So in this case, our rooms of the house. Two, it showcases our lines of business and how technology interacts, in our opinion, and our ability to take you end to end on your technology journey. And three, we actually have a maturity matrix, which provides benchmarks on each room of the house and helps you identify where you're at and where you want to get to, not just from a technology perspective, but what your technology stack and your technology house has to look like to achieve business outcomes. I go back to that example of the manufacturing company that only has 50 employees versus financial services that has 5,000. They're going to have a lot of different views on technology and use a lot of different tools. I think both should care about security, but they're going to use a lot of different systems on a day-to-day basis. So that's the big thing. The only other thing I would add with our technology house is specific to security. Security is the foundation of our house. So when you think about any house in the real world, you're only as strong as your foundation, and the foundation supports the rest of the house directly and indirectly. When making, and this is one of our value adds with security in the house, is that when making any investment in technology, it's important to consider the security implications it has, whether positive or negative. Whether you move from, say, an on-prem environment to a cloud environment might enhance your security and open up new opportunities there, but adding a new productivity tool might create new vulnerabilities in terms of security. So it's important to consider security, not just in when dealing with security, but when enhancing any type of technology within your business.
I love that. I love that the analogy of it's the foundation that you build the house upon. I think that makes a lot of business sense. So superpowers is what I talk about all the time at Microsoft. And because I think that for customers, I try to look at cybersecurity from a customer lens, and there's so much noise out there with different vendors and different partners and just lots of different options. So what I'd like to talk about is, what are your superpowers? What's your unique value? And to me, with Microsoft, one, it's about the data, because it is the data. That's what we're trying to protect. We're trying to protect assets, and a lot of those assets have to do with data. And who knows data better than Microsoft? So that's one of our superpowers. And then the other one is the telemetry that I spoke of earlier with the 65 trillion signals, and really normalizing that data and making it relevant and taking that information and pushing it into our products real time. And then that telemetry helping us shape our security strategy in the future. So to me, those are the two superpowers of Microsoft. Eric, what do you think your ProServe IT superpowers are?
I think our superpower, the reason people choose to work with us the most, is that we have a framework to demystify technology. So that house framework that Max spoke to, it's about making technology approachable and then creating accountability inside technology. That'd be one superpower, and it's that the whole house framework tied to the matrix, making it easy to adopt, easy to use, and use the right components. The second superpower I'd actually say is our partnership with Microsoft. It lets us see more than any business RFIs could. And when I look at the idea of partnering with Microsoft, who is leading the charge in all these really interesting areas to help make businesses better and do more with less, combined with our ability to demystify technology and create accountability for technology to deliver on what the business needs. To me, that's our superpowers relative to kind of what you described at the Microsoft ones.
Today, we will peel back the layers on some of the most important aspects of cybersecurity. We're going to talk about how Microsoft's threat protection system is becoming a crucial tool for companies to protect their business and how it collects 8 trillion signals a day to identify potential threats and respond quickly. We'll delve into the intriguing concept of the house framework as a method to contextualize and simplify technology, emphasizing the foundational role of security. Get ready for some insightful discussions and practical advice that could change the way you look at technology and its place in your organization. And that's a wrap for today's episode, Improve Your Insurability and Protect Your Business with Cybersecurity. We discussed the critical role of Microsoft's threat protection system in keeping your business protected, demystified the house framework as an accessible model for understanding technology, and emphasized the fundamental importance of security in a technological setting. As we conclude our cybersecurity series, we hope these discussions have offered you valuable insights and practical advice to strengthen your organization's cybersecurity posture. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we will be summarizing the main points, recapping the crucial discussions, and shedding light on the best practices that your organization can adopt for improved security. Remember, in this digital age, knowledge is your best defense. Thank you for joining us in this cybersecurity journey on What the Tech. Keep your ears open for our summary episode, where we will tie together all the loose ends. Stay safe and tech savvy.